Hi, everybody. This is Phil the Issues Guy from issuesprogram.com and Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Do you like television? Do you like talking about television? Do you have problems and can't sleep at night? If you any of those things are true, come on down and join Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Phil's recap and review, or check out issuesprogram.com to check out our stuff. Basically, what we do is we talk a lot about television, some movies, but mainly television. We do post-episode recaps, live viewings, drunk commentary games, and just general analysis. So if you love television, you don't have a ton of people to talk about television, or you just cannot get enough of some of these awesome shows like Vikings, Better Call Saul, Westworld, Game of Thrones, even The Walking Dead, and some other random shows that just pop up here and there. If you cannot get enough of all those programs and you want to talk about them, jump on over, join in the live motherfucking chat with some of the best people in the world that all share their thoughts real time whenever we go live. So if you subscribe to the YouTube channel, you follow the YouTube channel by clicking that little bell thing, you can find out anytime we go live. You can also check out issuesprogram.com for a backload of all of our stuff and check out our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, and lots of other places. Huge thanks to all of you, and hope you check it out and hope you enjoy it. And I'll talk to you guys next time.
Hello, bastards and wenches, and welcome to another edition of our Anime Boston 2018 podcast interview specials. On today's episode, we had the chance to chat with Monica Rial, one of our personal favorites in the American voice acting realm. As you know, this is our second time chatting with her, as we had the opportunity to interview her back at AB 2016. But since that time, she has made even more waves than ever before with her performances as Tanya in Saga of Tanya the Evil and Suyu in My Hero Academia, and she shows no signs of slowing down. B3 was joined with Anime Lab and The Geekly Grind in this incredibly fun press interview. So, let's summon the great and powerful dragon as we embark on this Anime Boston 2018 podcast special with Monica Rial.
So my first question does involve my little ginkgo there, or your ginkgo too. Your ginkgo,
well, it's going to smell like me after this, whether you like it or not.
And it was, your Kumarashi was a wonderful and eye-opening show about LGBT equality, mm-hmm. brought about in the crazy way that only his director Kunihiro Ikuhara could possibly do so. But it does start out, like in the first three episodes, portraying a perspective of those who are, you know, kind of against loving whomever they like. Mm-hmm. So when recording the role of Ginkgo, how are you seeing the show's portrayal of those on both sides of this debate? And how do you feel it did with delivering the message that it was conveying?
Ah, what a good question. Nice job. What was so cool about Ginkgo is that she doesn't understand why this is an issue. You know what I mean? She's like, this is the person that I love, and I want to be with them, and why is this such a big deal? And that's kind of how I feel with all of this, like, in just the world in general. It's like, I don't understand. If you love someone, I don't care if it's a boy or a girl or a hermaphrodite, whatever you want to do, it's on you. That's the person that you care about. And I think maybe people who haven't been in real love before don't understand that you can't really choose. It just kind of happens. But at the same time, I think that helped me play Ginkgo because it was like she very much had the same background as I did. Kind of like, I don't understand. This is who I want to be with. It was really, really jarring to see. You know, it's all done in analogy because that's kind of what Ikuhara does. But it was really beautifully done. And that is still one of the shows that when people ask about LGBTQ you know, rights and all that stuff, and what's a good anime for LGBTQ kids to watch so that they feel included. I'm like, definitely Yuri Kuma Arashi, because it shows you, you have this whole, what are they called, the group that are so anti-bears.
Yeah, which is an analogy of sorts.
Of like society. Yeah, and so you have them trying to stifle it and trying to win over, you know, the love of Ginkgo's life, trying to persuade her that this is not who you need to be with. You need to stay away from bears. They're very dangerous. And I love the fact that, you know, Ikuhara took a stand, because apparently in Japan it's very common for girls to have, and almost kind of like pushed on them, like, hey, when you're a girl, if you want to like date another girl or make out with another, you go right ahead. But as soon as you get to, you know, baby making age, then you need to find a husband and you need to make a baby, and that's what you do with your life. Like, that's just a Japanese thing. You know, like, they have the analogy, excuse me, I didn't warm up this morning, can you tell? Like, they have the analogy, like, if a nail sticks out higher than the others, you hammer it into place. Yeah. I know I'm totally wrecking that analogy, but that's kind of how they feel. Anything that's not normal is not good. Like, you want it to be like everything else. Like, that kind of, what is the word? Homogenized society. Yeah. And so I really love that he kind of stood out and went, hey, this doesn't have to be just a childhood thing or like a teenage thing. If a woman loves a woman, let her be with a woman. And he's always pushed that envelope, like even with Utena and shows like that. But I think it's a very powerful message that people need to hear, especially in the anime community. We've got a huge LGBTQ community in anime fandom. And it's nice for them to hear a positive message and not just have, you know, the stereotypical anime character who's gay and foppish and over the top. Like, these are people who are truly feeling these emotions and not, you know, being fabulous about it, you know? But I love this show. I'm so attached. And I never see things, so that's why I'm so huggy all over your Ginkgo, because I'm like, I never see stuff. And I think it's such a great show. And I hope that, you know, the longer it's out there, the more people will talk about it and it'll be seen.
Cool.
It's an important message.
Good question.
Great. Hello.
Hi, my name is John. I'm from Anime Lab Reactions.
Oh, cool.
I'm a YouTuber focused on Dragon Ball.
Uh-huh.
I'm actually friends with Geekdom. You're going to be
on. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I talked to him recently.
Yeah. We're going to be coming and have fun as well.
Oh, fun. It's so going to be rad.
My question to you is, what has been your favorite moment from the Dragon Ball Super series, either from the dubs or from the Japanese?
Well, okay, here's the thing. I feel like I should move Ginkgo. Hold, stay right there. here's the thing. So I don't watch the Japanese subtitle because I want to be surprised to an extent. Now, it's almost impossible to be surprised with anything Dragon Ball, because as soon as it happens, people are like, oh my god, did you see Super? Bleh. And I'm like, no, I don't want to hear it. So I know things that are coming up, but I don't know how they happen. And so that's what's kind of cool. Like, as an actor, I want to experience it in the moment. As far as what's happened so far in Super, my favorite episode, well, got two. My favorite episodes by far are the episode where Bulma and Whis are hanging out. She's trying to bribe him with food to make sure that her family is going to be safe. And then Vegeta comes down and tells Whis all about the ramen. That one is hilarious. And I also love the episode where Jocko and Bulma go on their little adventure to go find a giant head guy. I forget his actual name. Because Todd Habercorn and I have been friends for a long time, and so it was really fun to get to play that comedy off of each other. And then more recently, I finally got to do the scene where Bulma tries to distract Zamasu, and that really was a lot of fun. I was like, what does she do? Oh, this is fun. This is totally fun. But yeah, I love Super because she's so much more a part of the series. Like, Kai was great. You know, and the movies were great. It was my birthday party in Battle of Gods. That's awesome. But usually she's kind of there as a catalyst. Like, hey, I've got this cool time machine. And then the boys take it and do whatever they want with it. Or, hey, I've got these cool capsules. Sweet, we're going to take that. Or this radar, this dragon radar. Okay, well, we're going to use that. So finally in Super, she's much more a part of the situation. We get to see her in the lab way more. We see what she's capable of. And I think that that's really cool. And she's a really good role model for girls. Like, she's gone from flashing her panties at Roshi to get what she wants to actually, like, you know, using her feminine wiles and ways, but still being incredibly smart, a great scientist, a wonderful inventor, and she's also the richest lady in the world. So it gives girls a goal to strive for. But yeah, those are my favorites. Hello.
Hi, I'm Alexandra. I'm from the Geekly Grind.
Oh, I like it.
Speaking of Bulma, do you find there are a lot of expectations coming from fans on voicing such a beloved character?
Oh, gosh, yes. But at the same time, I feel like everybody's, like, the fandom is so welcoming and so cool. Like, when I started, it was almost 10 years ago now, but I started on Dragon Ball Z Kai. And, of course, you know, there were 8 other Bulmas that came before me. But it was one of those things when you have a character that is so prolific. Like, I knew who Bulma was way before I was ever even a voice actor. Something that's that prolific, and you have so many other people that have kind of put their toe in the water, then I kind of took it as my job to watch all of those different Bulmas and then listen to the Japanese and go, okay, this is what my Bulma's going to do. It's going to be an homage to all these ladies, but more importantly, an homage to Hiromi Suru, the original Bulma, the OG Bulma, as it was. So that was daunting. And in the beginning, there were some people that were like, this is different. I don't like it. But I just kept persisting. I was like, eventually, I'm going to win them over. I'm sure of it. If there's one thing I know I can do, it's act. So I'm going to keep going. So over the course of Kai, I went from paying homage to kind of creating my own, like especially when we get into the Boo saga. I was like, screw it. I'm just going to go and do my own version. And then when we got to the movies and Super, it finally felt like it was my Bulma. So I was able to give her my all. But I think that people have really, really welcomed me with open arms. They've been really, really awesome. I hope that everybody will do the same with Aya Hisakawa, who's now playing Bulma since Hiromi Suru passed, because Aya's amazing. But yeah, overall, I think the fandom is really, really accepting, really, really good. Like any fandom, they have a tendency to get a little dramatic. Something happens, everybody goes, oh my god, this is the end of the world. And then the next day, everybody's like, so that new episode of Super. So, but that's just, you know, that's any fandom, really, because people are so passionate about it. And while other people might be like, oh my gosh, everybody gets so excited about Dragon Ball, and I'm like, yeah, that means that they care. That means they're passionate and they love these characters. And so, yeah, it's a lot of weight to know that, like, that's what you're holding in your hands are people's expectations. And especially since a lot of people have already seen the Japanese, they already have expectations of what they want to see. So then it's your job to exceed those expectations. So that when they watch it, they're like, wow, that's even better than I thought it was going to be. Which is very daunting, but I like challenges. So I'm always all for it. I'm like, I'm going to try to just take it as far as I can so that people really can feel the emotion behind the character.
Okay, so a role like Tanya von der Gerasheim is one that just seems to have been made just for you to play.
I know, right?
So what sort of mentality did you find yourself getting into when it came time to voice who is more than likely the most evil 10-year-old girl in the history of entertainment?
Well, it's funny because on a total side note, when the director, Jeremy Inman, heard Tanya and, like, watched the first episode, he's like, holy crap, that sounds like Japanese Monica. And since then, I've been cast in 6 different shows because everybody goes, wow, that's what Monica would sound like if she spoke Japanese. So I would really love to meet Aoi Yuki because apparently she is the Japanese version of me, or I'm the English version of her, however you want to. She's a lot younger than I am. But at the same time, I think it's really cool that we've played so many different roles that are completely opposite each other. Like Suyu and Tanya Degurachov couldn't be any more different, but it's the same Seiyus on both sides of the pond, which is really cool. But Tanya, what I love about Tanya is, without spoiling anything, when you learn her history, you realize, oh, wow, as an actor, that was so fascinating. It's like, okay, things are not as they appear. She's technically a 10-year-old girl. But when you know her past, it's like, okay, now it's this 10-year-old that has this weird thing going on over here. And then she's also, like, the leader of the army, but she has these, she recalls this history that she's able to use in her favor. But I think the most important thing in a show like The Saga of Tanya the Evil is, even though we know she's evil, when I play Tanya, I can't think of her as like, mwahahaha, I'm evil, you know what I mean? Because then it would just be a very shallow character. You don't want to be the guy that's tying the girl up to the train tracks, because that's just a very flat performance. So when I approached Tanya, I had to approach it from the, what I'm doing is right. I am on the right side of the law. I am on the right side of justice. I'm not evil. I'm misunderstood. Everybody else is evil. They shouldn't be doing this. I'm going to make my way up to the top to save myself. And I think because of that, it creates a more dynamic performance than opposed to just, ooh, I'm evil. I will say that it was one of my absolute favorite shows ever, because I am a history buff. But not only that, the scene in episode 2, again, no spoilers, but there's a scene that happens pretty early on in episode 2 that I think is probably, if not the, then one of the coolest scenes I've ever seen in an anime. And I absolutely love it. I also love the whole dichotomy of the God against man kind of thing that's happening. There's so many awesome things happening. But I always tell people, you know, watch episode 1, but hook, stay around until episode 2, because episode 2 is where we really understand. Episode 1 is just kind of building the world and showing us who the people are. Episode 2 is where they really get to the meat of it and say, hey, this is what's happening behind the scenes. God, I love that show so much. And I'm glad that people are starting to watch it, because it came out the same time as like Yuri on Ice, and everybody's like, ice skating! Woo! And I'm like, but evil little girls and military... No? Anybody?
Hey, we got popular enough to get a movie.
Right. So I think that's the thing. And there's so many light novels that I'm hoping that it will continue, because it really is such a good show. And it plays like a movie. That's one of the things that I really love, too, is that there were whole scenes where J. Michael Tatum and I's characters were just sitting down talking about life and military tactic. And it's like, oh, I just get to act. I don't have to worry about, like, you know, being crazy or over the top. It's just two people, you know, talking about all of these really specific things, and it's not that big over-the-top anime delivery. It's just like we're on stage, and it was really cool. I love it.
So, question is from the Dragon Ball community.
Yes.
The subscribers who submitted this question.
Cool.
How different do you try to voice future Bulma in the Vegeta Trunks arc to present Bulma? What kind of goes through your head when you're voicing that character?
It's a good question. Well, with younger Bulma, well, regular Bulma, as it were, I really like to play up the whole, now in Super, she's way sassier than she was before, right? She's real sassy. She likes to work her sex appeal. You know, she's got her feminine wiles working for her, as we see with Zamasu. It doesn't work, but still. She tries. So I try to keep her spunkier and sassier and really vivacious. So then when we get to future Bulma's seen some stuff, right? She's a little hardened and maybe a little bitter. At the same time, she's that positive force that's kind of driving Trunks and driving Mai and driving all these people and giving them hope. So while I try to give the voice more of like a ragged kind of breathy tone to show that she's tired. She's tired and she's been working hard. But at the same time, I still want to give her that feeling of hope. So she's still got a little bit of that vivaciousness that young Bulma has. Everything is said with a smile. Like, even if she knows, like, when she's talking to Trunks and she's like, you're the one that's going to have to do this. Like, it's all up to you. She's real tired, but you can hear the smile in her voice, because she's like, you're going to be the one that saves us all. And I can't tell you how awesome that is. But yeah, it was really hard, because your tendency, like, you see her and she looks tired and she looks worn out. So the instinct is to want to be like older and kind of just, but she's still so powerful and she's still so smart and she's still so vivacious, and all of that hope and energy needs to come through. So I still gave her a little bit of that tired aspect, but at the same time, I wanted everything to sound like it came out with a smile, so that it's like she still has that positive attitude even after everything that she's been through. Poor future Bulma.
What's it like voicing Suyu, aka the best hero?
Voicing Suyu is amazing because I get to talk like this all day long. The only problem with this is that if I get a cold, I can still go to work. But yeah, Suyu's fantastic. I love it because, you know, she's become such a popular hero amongst the fandom. And for me, I went into Colleen, the director, and I was like, I feel bad. She's like, why do you feel bad? I was like, because everybody loves Suyu, but I haven't said a whole lot. This was before her whole episode. But I was like, I don't say a lot. Like, I come in and go, oh, just call me Sue, or Bibbit. You know what I mean? Like, that's all I do. And she's like, just go with it. Why do you feel bad about it? I was like, well, I feel like I'm cheating them. But her costume, her design is so cool. And she's such a neat character. And I was so, so thrilled that she got her own little episode, like a little additional side episode, so that we could finally see some of her behind the scenes. And I've heard rumor that there's going to be, or there are OVAs, and one of them has to do solely with Suyu, which I would love to see. But yeah, I adore her. She's the cutest thing. Every time, we've already started working on season 3, and every time I go in and just, you know, talk like this, Colleen and I giggle, because it's the most absurd voice, but I love it so much. I'm hoping that she gets even more screen time, because she really is fabulous. It's such a good heart, you know? All of them do. That show is really, really awesome. Those characters are so great and three-dimensional, but Suyu is amazing.
So, I was very surprised to hear you as Lieutenant Mendoza in the French animated series last week.
Oh, yeah!
So, can you talk about how you tackled this role, which, not to spoil anything, has to kind of transform into a couple different personalities throughout the run?
Yeah, that one was crazy. I really think the only reason I was cast is because the character's name is Monica Mendoza, and I think that Senator Nicholas probably went, Monica! Yeah! I love it. I think it's super. The animation style in itself is so cool, and it's so different than anything that I've seen. You know, it's like the French style of anime, as it were, and it's really, really neat. And the story is so messed up and so crazy. And a lot of it I was kind of doing on my own because I'm in Dallas, and of course they're all out in LA. But I loved her. Talk about a challenge. Like, you know, there were certain scenes, and again, kind of playing like a movie, where it was me and my partner just chatting and talking about a case, and everything was played really low, like it would be on screen. And sometimes those are my favorites. Because, you know, when you get into anime, everybody kind of delivers everything like this, and everything's huge and over the top. So I always like to make the choices that make it more real, to make it sound like it's just two people talking to each other, and that show had a lot of that. Now, the ending, without any spoilers, was insane. In fact, the first time we watched through it, the engineer that I was working with was like, I'm not going to put my name on this. Totally get it. I understand why. I get it. But for me, it was cool to see it. And I really want to go back and watch the whole show. I haven't had an opportunity to do so. But yeah, I was just so stoked to be a part of it. And that animation is so cool. And the story's so neat. But yeah, Monica Mendoza. Yes.
So a few months ago, we were interviewing Brian Drummond, and he mentioned that typically for voice actors, voice actresses, it's really hard for them to get attached to a particular role because there's just so many coming. Is there a particular role that you have performed that you are emotionally attached to that character, and you're being very sad and you can't be that character anymore in the future?
Yeah, I think that I may be different in that respect because I get attached. I get so attached. And I think it's because, like, I was talking about this on my panel yesterday. I come from a stage background and, like, a very actor background. And so I'm used to, like, taking a character and figuring out stupid specifics. Like, where did they grow up? And what kind of vegetables do they like? What kind of vegetables don't they like? And, like, giving them secrets and, like, little psychoses that nobody else is even going to know is there. But I know it's there, and it changes the performance. So I really get into building characters. That's my thing. thing. So even with anime characters, even like somebody say Bulma, there's so much media out there and we know so much about her. I still have little idiosyncrasies and things that I've given her that nobody would ever know because I'm not going to tell anybody until way later and I can be like, did you figure out this? And so that's what I enjoy. I love building characters. And as a result, I end up getting really heavily invested because I've spent all this time getting into their head and trying to understand them that they kind of become a part of me and I become a part of them. You know what I mean? Not to sound like Sybil, the lady that's got 48 voices in her head, but it's kind of my daily life. So yeah, I get really, really invested. If anybody tried to take any character from me, I would probably have to cut someone. But you know, like especially the longer running, you know, Bulma, of course, I've been voicing her for almost 10 years now. I'm incredibly attached. You know, and down to like Tanya Dagurachov or Ginko, or they're all characters that I've spent so much time, you know, honing and getting into their mindset. No, granted, if it's like girl A in Ninja Shosho, then yeah, I may not be as attached to her, and it's totally fine if somebody else were to play girl A. I'm not going to be upset. But the ones that I've actually developed a relationship with or that I have a lot of lines, or even if it's not a lot of lines, if it's an important character, or a pivotal character, and yeah, I get really attached. Don't take my roles. Yes.
Have you found that there have been any characters that you've voiced that have been particularly challenging to bring to life?
Yes, there's quite a few. So I always tell people that I didn't really learn how to voice act until a show called Princess Nine, which is about baseball, but it's very character driven. Until then, I was just a stage actor trying to figure out how this whole, like, how do I take being on stage and then move it into being in front of a microphone, which is a much smaller dynamic. Right after Princess Nine, I figured it out, or I felt like I figured it out. Then I worked on a show called Noir. And Noir is a beautiful, beautiful older show, and I really think it still, you know, keeps up even today. But I played a character named Kirika Yumura. And so Kirika wakes up and kind of doesn't remember anything about her whole life. So she doesn't have a whole lot to say, other than when she's in her head trying to figure out what's going on. So a lot of times when she would reply to questions given to her by the other character, Muriel, a lot of them are like monosyllabic tones or reactions. So they'd be like, okay, Kirika, we're going to go bust through this door and we're going to go kill all those men. Huh? And then, okay, Kirika, are you ready to go? This is going to be hardcore. Uh-huh. And then, okay, Kirika, okay, I know you're sad, but we're going to have to do this tomorrow. Uh-huh. Like, so many things that I had to convey just in an uh-huh. It was so challenging, but I can't. It was such a great experience because having figured out the voice acting thing and then going to something that was so challenging, I felt like that time period is when I learned the most. And I've worked with Matt Greenfield on both of those shows, and he taught me so much. But those are the characters that say the least and convey the most emotion are the most difficult, in my opinion. Voice-wise, there's a character named Lito from De Grey Man, and Lito was kind of hard just because after you talk like this for 8 hours, it starts to hurt a little bit. But yeah, he was the only one that's been vocally taxing. I guess May Rin on occasion, because talking like this is kind of the same thing. But yeah, if they're vocally taxing, then you just know you can't do it for more than an hour or two at a time.
Yeah, with My Hero Academia being legit its own comic book universe within an anime series. Mm-hmm. I'd be curious to know, if you were given the opportunity to share your thoughts on if Froppy were to be given her own spin-off show, what would you like for her to do?
You know, I really loved the episode that she got where it just kind of showed her learning how to be the best hero she can be and showing what she's capable of and her heart of gold. I would really love to see something like that. I mean, I know that we don't get a lot of episodic anime, but I think in that case it might be fun to have a monster of the week that Suyu is somehow, you know, responsible for getting, and then maybe have everybody else kind of cross through. I think that'd be really great. I'd love to see more about where she comes from, why Froppy, why a frog girl? Are her parents frogs? Are they other amphibians? Like, I would like to see what her history is, because I'm not 100% sure. And also, I love the character relationship, so I'd love to see more of, like, her and her buddies just hanging out. Maybe her and Otako going to the mall and having ice cream, or, you know what I mean? Just the two of them hanging out, and less of the we're in class trying to be heroes, and just a day in the life kind of situation of those characters. I'm kind of fun. Thank you guys so much. Y'all's questions are great. Y'all were rad. I appreciate it. Thank you for letting me put your food on.
You're welcome.